Last Sunday, we did Psalm 18, and among Psalm 18, it talked about David being in trouble, and then he called upon God, and the chariot throne of God came to rescue him. And you remember, we're going to go to Ezekiel 1 if you're in a hurry, but last week we did Psalm 18, and David called out in his need, and the God flew upon the cherubim, it says. And he came in response, came like an earthquake and like a storm. And it said, God rode upon the cherubim and flew in Psalm 18, verse 10. And that brought to mind the image of God's chariot throne and where God came to David in the storm. Now, when we think of heaven, we'd go to Revelation to get a good description of God's throne room in the heavenly city. But I wanted to look today at God's chariot throne, and for that we will have to go to Ezekiel, and we will study mostly Ezekiel 1, but I want to read something beginning in Ezekiel 8. So if you'll please turn to Ezekiel 8, we'll eventually read a flashback where Ezekiel's describing the chariot throne of God. And then he will say, it's just like what I saw earlier. Well, just like chapter 1. So come with me to Ezekiel 8. We'll read selections from 8 and a little bit on 9, and then look at the throne room in 10. I'm going to begin reading at Ezekiel 8:8 to kind of get a flavor of the times in which Ezekiel wrote. It's between the deportations. The Babylonians have come and dragged a few people off into exile. That's how Ezekiel got into Babylon in exile. But there's coming the final destruction of the city. And Ezekiel here shortly will describe the glory of God arising and leaving Jerusalem. So let's look at the conditions of the day in Ezekiel 8, verse 8. And he said to me, Son of man, now dig through the wall. So I dug through the wall. Behold, an entrance. So you can kind of see through the hole in the wall. Verse 9, he said to me, go in and see the wicked abominations that they are committing there. So I entered and looked, and behold, every form of creeping things and beasts and detestable things with all the idols of the house of Israel were carved on the wall all around. Now verse 12. Then he said to me, Son of man, do you see what the elders of the house of Israel are committing in the dark? Each man in the room with his carved images, for they say, the Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land. He said to me, yet you will see greater abominations which they are committing. Then he brought me to the entrance of the gate of the Lord's house, that's the temple. And what are they doing at the temple towards the north? Behold, women were sitting there and weeping for Tammuz. Tammuz is like an idol, and the idol in the mythology, the idol died, and the women in the temple were having a choir, and they're crying and lamenting for this stupid mythology where the idol's son had died. Close of verse 16, they're bowing down towards the east and worshiping the sun. That's a little flavor of the times in which Ezekiel writes, the place is ready for judgment. So when we read the chariot throne of God coming from the north, it will be an imagery of God coming in judgment upon Israel. I mean, that the chariot throne of God came to rescue David, but here in this Ezekiel context, these people are bad. And it did make me think of modern times, you could see what they're doing. They think they're in the dark and no one sees them, and you look through them. And God sees the same thing today in our world. God doesn't why. He knows all of it. Now, a couple of verses out of chapter 9 of Ezekiel. God also knows the saved people from the unsaved. And he knows which are his. So Ezekiel chapter 9, I'd like to read verses 4 and 5. Ezekiel Ezekiel 9:4, and the Lord said to him, "Go through the midst of the city, even through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and groan over all the abominations which are being committed in its midst." But to the others, he said in my hearing, "Go through the city after him and strike. Do not let your eye have pity. Do not spare." So in chapter 8, God is showing he sees all the evil. In chapter 9, he's saying, I can tell the saved ones from the unsaved ones. I can tell those who have faith from those who do not have faith. I can tell those who worship idols from those who worship a true God. And when the destruction upon Jerusalem came, finally in 586, God had, "These are my people. They're a minority. These don't care." That's what he's telling Ezekiel. It's a message of judgment. It's a message of the division between the population that's left there. Now in chapter 10, we see the chariot throne of God, and what it's going to do, it's going to leave the temple. It's going to go. Never came back, by the way. The glory of God left in Ezekiel's day. It did not come back. It'll come back when the Lord Jesus Christ returns second coming. Now, in a veiled and hidden way, he came back, and he is the glory of God. But he veiled except for maybe the transfiguration. And Peter, James, and John could see, but most of it was hidden. But it left in Ezekiel's day and never did come back to the temple. Ezekiel chapter 10, I'd like to read verses 1 and 2, and then we'll skip down to verse 10. "Then I looked, and behold, in the expanse that was over the heads of the cherubim, something like a sapphire stone in appearance, resembling a throne, and appeared above them. And he spoke to the man clothed in linen, and said, 'Enter between the whirling wheels under the cherubim, and fill your hands with coals of fire from between the cherubim, and scatter them over the city.'" Now, verse 10. "As for their appearance, all four of them had the same likeness as if a wheel were within another wheel. But when they moved, they went in any of the four directions without turning as they went. But they followed the direction which they faced without turning as they went. And their whole body, their backs, their hands, their wings, their wheels were full of eyes all around, the wheels belonging to all four of them. And the wheels were called in my hearing the whirling wheels. And each one had four faces. The first face was the face of a cherub, the second face of a man, the third the face of a lion, the fourth the face of an eagle. Then the cherubim rose up. They are the living beings that I saw by the river." See, and that's going to be, I saw something like them again. So when we go back to chapter 1, it's like flashback. I saw these before. And then let's look at verse 16. "Now when the cherubim moved, the wheels would go beside them. Also when the cherubim lifted up their wings to rise from the ground, the wheels would not turn from beside them. When the cherubim stood still, the wheels would stand still. And when they rose up, the wheels would rise with them, for the spirit of a living being was in them. Then the glory of the Lord departed from the threshold of the temple and stood over the cherubim." And then verse 20, this is what I saw before, and we'll go back to chapter 1. I wanted to read this because this is the context of judgment. The chariot throne of God in Ezekiel comes for judgment. And God knows which ones are His and which ones are worshiping the idols. And he, as Ezekiel's going to warn, is going to destroy the city. He's going to differentiate between those people that are saved and those that are unsaved when he does it. So this is, in chapter 10, a flashback. The original is in chapter 1. Will you go there now, please? I had originally made this sermon for the first service, and I thought, this is such a strange topic, I will do it for everyone. That we might look at something that we don't see very often. So please come to Ezekiel chapter 1 and the beginning of it. is the call of Ezekiel, and we'll look at verses 1 through 3. Now it came about in the 30th year, on the 5th day of the 4th month, when I was by the river Kebar among the exiles, the heavens were opened, and I saw the visions of God. On the 5th of the month, in the 5th year of King Jehoiakim's exile, the word of the Lord came expressly to Ezekiel the priest, son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kebar, and there the hand of the Lord came upon him. There are great details here as to time. He's 30 years old. He's a priest. And the date, because it gives the exact day, the best, July 31st, 597 B.C. So almost this time of year. This is in the context of Ezekiel being called to ministry. There are others like this. Jeremiah was called, and God said, before you ever born, I knew you. I consecrated you a prophet. And Jeremiah says, I can't do this. I'm afraid. I'm too young. Jeremiah was called. In Isaiah 6, Isaiah sees the throne of God, and here am I, send me. Isaiah was called. Here's the call to Ezekiel. So, only time in the Old Testament says the heavens were open, and I looked up. In the New Testament, we have the stoning of Stephen, where he sees the Son of Man in the right hand of God. So it happens again elsewhere. But in the Old Testament, this is the only time the heavens are opened, the words. But others did see God. Jacob wrestled with the theophany of God, and it changed him, changed his name. And Moses saw an appearance of God on Mount Sinai, and it changed him. His face glowed afterwards. And Isaiah saw the Lord in a vision, high and lifted up, and he never got over it. Really humbled and then ambitious. Here am I, send me. And Paul saw God on the Damascus Road, and it changed his life. And John saw a manifestation of the Son of Man at Patmos, and it changed his life. I do not think today that, you know, there are no apostles and prophets, and no one will see God and then have a message for others, as in the role of a prophetic spokesman. I might make room for an occasional personal appearance. I don't think they're all fraudulent, but Paul, when he had one, wouldn't talk about it. Say in 2 Corinthians 12, I saw this 14 years ago, and I kept it to myself because it's so overwhelming. I wouldn't say a strictly personal one is out of place, but more pertinent is, do we see God in the Bible, and do we understand God? He's not an old man in a rocking chair that barely has any strength. Not true. That's not what this vision is going to be. That's not what this is going to be like. And all through here, the hand of the Lord is upon Ezekiel. It's all the way through the book. You have the references before me. And then there's talk of getting the Lord's favor, because the hand of the Lord, the blessing is upon him. He is given a message before he is called into the ministry, which is the proper order. This is critical and mean, but I do think sometimes people go into ministry before they have a message. And the whole point of it in their thinking is to, what, show off, prance around, crow like a rooster, stand up on King of the Hill. More important to have the message right than be called, then go on the ministry, rather than, you know, like to go on the ministry because you get attention that way. So Ezekiel is being called, and he's going to be given a message. And the message is, God is coming to Israel, and in this specific story, he's not happy. He's coming to them in judgment. Although for our purposes, we will be looking at what is God like. And just maybe glance, kind of at the end. The last verse is chapter 28. And at the end it says, last couple sentences, such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. So we will begin at verse 4. And before we get to the end, Ezekiel says, you're going to see the glory of the Lord. You're going to see what he's like on his chariot throne. Now we look at our second portion today is verse 4. through verse 14. And as I looked, behold, a storm wind was coming from the north, a great cloud with fire flashing forth continually and a bright light around it. And in its midst, something like glowing metal in the midst of the fire. And within it were figures resembling four living beings. And this was their appearance. They had human form. And each of them had four faces and four wings. And their legs were straight. And their feet were like calves' hooves. And they gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their four sides, were human hands. As for the faces and wings of the four of them, their wings touched one another. Their faces did not turn when they moved. Each one went straight forward. As for the form of their faces, each had the face of a man. All four had the face of a lion on the right, face of a bull on the left. All four had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. Their wings were spread out above. Each had two touching another being and two covering their bodies. And they went straight forward wherever the Spirit was about to go. So they would go without turning as they went. In the midst of the living beings, there was something that looked like burning coals of fire, like torches darting back and forth among living beings. The fire was bright, and the lightning was flashing from the fire. And the living beings ran to and fro like bolts of lightning. Chapter 2, he will call Ezekiel, the Son of Man, and call him into the ministry. This is the preliminary of it. This is like the power to go into the ministry. And he's telling Ezekiel, this is what God is like. Now go serve him and don't be afraid of the people he has to bring a message of judgment to. These angels do whatever he wants, God telling them. It says back up, it comes from the north. At the beginning of where we were reading, they come from the north, which probably signifies they're coming out of Babylon, and you're going to get judged. The chariot throne of God is coming to judge. The approach of God is with these cherubim, and God is enthroned above a platform above the cherubim. The cherubim are going to be kind of like the four wheels of the chariot, with a platform on top and a throne seated on top of the platform and a glowing molten lava being representing God sitting on top of that throne. The initial description is like a storm coming, wind, clouds, fire, references to a rainbow. There was also in the verse out of Revelation that Ed read for us a minute ago. Glowing metal. It reminds me of my youth when I worked making car parts. Put these, they would burn them. They'd be treated so they wouldn't melt. They would come out orange, just totally hot. And throw them in a vat of water and they would come up a conveyor belt to you and you could barely touch them even though you had stuff on your hands. Glowing metal. We usually don't think of God on his throne like this. Yeah, kind of like this. He's on a throne, on a platform. Here are these cherubim on each of the four wheels. Molten metal. Charles Feinberg, who's a previous generation Hebrew scholar, says amber color, yellow color, the Septuagint translated electrum, which is a mix between silver and gold. The picture zooms in, and we have a glowing metal, and as we have with chapter 10, below these cherubim are wheels. Wheels, cherubim, platform, throne, glowing metal, burning being, flashing humanoid representing God on the throne. Plenty of texts in the Bible on cherubim. Overall, if you have to pick one thing, they're human looking, but they're not like any human we've ever seen. I mean, if you just have to pick one, human, but four faces, four wings, straight legs, no knee joints, feet like hooves, did not turn when they moved, and two wings touching each other. Often it's pictured like a square, and you know, one of them's like this, and the other one over here is like this, and you have the other two on the other side, and they're like the wheels moving this heavenly throne chariot. And each they're looking forward, and each angel has wings touching each other, and they're forming a square, which are the four wheels of the chariot on top of a platform. The face that faces forward all the time is human. Right side lion, left side ox, back presumably the eagle. Guesses as to symbols. The human is intelligence. The lion is power. The ox might be service, as they've been domesticated and most useful. The eagle might be speed. If you had to guess, and sometimes we're guessing here, human represent the closest you can get to the image of God. That's why that face is forward, and even in the angels. A lion, king of the wild beast. Ox, the highest and most useful of the beasts. And the eagle, king of the birds. We're just kind of guessing there at some of these things. It's certainly a different picture than what we would expect when you think of a throne. Cherubim are mentioned 90 times in the Old Testament. You actually put all these together to have a little theology of the cherubim. They are guarding the Garden of Eden so that the humans who have fallen don't go back in. And they seem to protect the presence of God and His holiness. All through the Old Testament, it says God sits above the cherubim, which is a picture of the Ark of the Covenant, whereby the cherubim are over the Ark and God is between them. So they're like guarding God's presence. This is a picture of the chariot throne of God, and we presume the cherubim are doing the same thing, that they're guarding His presence, guarding His holiness. Now we have to try to make this applicable, but the first question then is, how do we picture God in our minds? What do we think of when we think of God? Some mock Him, some get mad at Him and blame Him, and others subordinate that thought at all times. He's just not that important. Or it's a reverse. The thinking is that God exists to serve me rather than I exist to worship Him. He exists to serve me. And they don't say it that way, but that's a very modern thought. You have to sell God. You know, He really is good enough for you. He really is good enough. Why don't you take a little God? You know, might be able to be more productive. He's self-help coach, and he might just be good enough for us. Whereas the real image of God, if we could see it, it was like we're not good enough for Him. It is a privilege to serve Him. He's not our servant. His whole reason to exist is not to worship us. It's backwards, but it's backwards in a lot of our thinking. Whenever in the Bible they really do ever see God, they shut up. Relative to our own sin, says in Romans 3, every mouth would be stopped and all the world guilty before God, Romans 3:20. And Philippians 2, every knee will bow. So here's a picture of the cherubim, and they are kind of bringing this platform through the sky. It's sort of like a storm, sort of like a molten, glowing center in the four cherubim. Then it says they have a lightning darting back and forth like torches. Helps me to think of the science experiment where you have this crystal ball, and every time you touch it, the lightning comes up. The electricity comes up. We've all seen them. I see them on the Mr. Bean videos, which I have packed. I don't take any clothes to Michigan. I take Mr. Bean videos, or he does the deal. But moving with the speed of lightning, the biblical picture of God is not the weak person who is at our beck and call. You know, the guy on the rocking chair that can't do anything. Well, when he wants to move forward, he'll move forward. When God wants to move along world destiny or individual plans, he'll move along. And no detours, no delay, no stop. Satan won't stop him. And all the humans put together won't stop him. Declaring the end from the beginning, saying, my purpose will stand, Isaiah 46:10. Or he shuts and no one opens, he opens and no one shuts, Revelation 3, verse 7. Or Numbers 23:19, hath he not said it and shall he not do it? Sometimes it helps me in my thinking when people, when the whole world is mad and crazy acting, I sort of think to myself, we'll just have to take it up with the boss later. Because I can't do much about it. I can't do much about the world conditions or the national conditions, which are in spiritual decline. But this is the God that we serve. And when he wants to move things forward, he'll move it. When he wants to call into it, he'll call into it. And there won't be any back talk. So sometimes I think, well, I can't seem to do anything about this situation. But you can take it up with the boss later. Now we move on at verse 15, and it kind of zeroes in on these wheels. Chapter 1 of Ezekiel, verse 15. Now as I looked at the living beings, behold, there was one wheel on earth beside the living beings for each of the four of them. The appearance of the wheels and their workmanship was like sparkling beryl, and all four of them had the same form, their appearance and workmanship being as if one wheel were within another. Whenever they moved in any of the four directions without turning as they moved. As for the rims, they were lofty and awesome. I have that in my notes. Awesome. And the rims, all four of them, were full of eyes around about. Yeah, while I'm thinking of it, a couple of you in the church are artists. Might want to draw chapter 1 sometime. I don't know whether it would sell, but it really would be interesting to try to work your way through this chariot throne of God. Verse 19, and whenever the living beings moved, the wheels moved with them. And whenever the living beings rose above the earth, the wheels rose also. Wherever the spirit was about to go, they would go in that direction, and the wheels rose close beside them. For the spirit of the living beings was in the wheels. Whenever these went, those went. Whenever those stood still, these stood still. That is, the angels moved, the wheels were connected to them. That's what the these and those are. The wheels are integral to the cherubim. Last full sentence. And whenever those rose from the earth, the wheels rose close beside them, for the spirit of the living beings was in the wheels. Strange. A long time ago, our band director, way back in high school, he came from Shreveport, Louisiana, where he was a university band director there. And then I guess in his retirement, he was our teacher. And he picked a song, Ezekiel Saw the Wheels, which I don't think made the top 10, but somebody was thinking about it. I can't remember the tune anymore, but some people had read Ezekiel, and this is like a picture of the throne of God. I could quote this for you, but I'd like you to see it. If you'll come to 1 Chronicles 28, we'll see a relevant text to the chariot throne of God. At the close of 1 Chronicles in chapter 28, David is thinking about passing on, and he's given Solomon wisdom, Solomon to build the temple, and he's made a treasury in preparation for building a temple. And then in 1 Chronicles 20:18, he says there's enough gold to do a certain project. could have quoted it, but I wanted you to see it. As for the altar of incense, refine gold by weight, and gold for the model of the chariot, even the cherubim that spread out their wings and covered the ark of the covenant of the Lord. So David's given a list of things he wants Solomon to build, and he says, I want you to build this model chariot that is like the ark of the covenant. The picture of the Ark of the Covenant was, here's this broken law, and on the lid, here's the blood covering the broken law, and God exists between the cherubim, and he looks down, and he sees the blood on the mercy seat covering the broken law. But what we usually don't think of is here, David is telling Solomon, I want you to build a chariot that's like the Ark of the Covenant, a model. Not for any worship purpose, but a model. So in their thinking, there are the wheels, then there are these cherubim, which we've described, then there's this platform above it, then there is this throne, and then there is this molten, glowing being, God, on this throne, and these cherubim on these wheels are propelling God through the sky. And the Ark of the Covenant kind of looked like that. Build a model, Solomon, a model chariot that's like the chariot throne of God in the Ark of the Covenant because he dwells between the cherubim. So Ezekiel's getting a supernatural vision of the real thing. And the chariot throne of God is moving in response to the judgment upon Israel, and it's also going to leave the glory of God out of the temple and never come back. It's going to pick up the glory of God and take it away. And then Israel's doomed. It didn't come back. Ezekiel saw this supernatural chariot. Now, I would like to apply it this way. The universe is not motionless, and it's not without direction. And God is working his plan. And although it's kind of different, it kind of reminded me of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, where God is marching on. When he wants to move through history and do a dealing, he will move through history. He'll move it along when he wants to move it along. And when he wants to end it, he'll end it. When he wants the rapture and the snatching of the believers up to Christ, he will do so. And then at the end of 7 years, when he wants to come back and take it all back again and rule it for 1,000 years, he will do it. The chariot throne of God is unstoppable. It is orderly. It is planned. And when it says in Corinthians, let all things be done decently and in order in the church, that is the way God does things in heaven. It's decently and in order. And he has his plan and no one will stop it. The wheels sparkle. They're kind of yellowish gold. They glow. It's somewhat like a gyroscope because it's a wheel within a wheel. Now, God's eyes are that he's roving through all around the earth to support those whose heart is fully his. 2 Chronicles 16, verse 9. God's eyes are omnipresent, and evidently these angelic eyes are kind of subordinate to him. That he knows what's going on. He sees through the little keyhole, as we saw in the earlier chapter of Ezekiel chapter 8. And God's plan's going to move forward, and he knows everything that's happening. We must now go to verse 22. And we'll look at Ezekiel 1, verses 22 through 25. Sounds like you're back there from our Chronicles text, Ezekiel 1:22. Now, over the heads of the living beings, there was something like an expanse, like an awesome gleam of crystal extended over their heads. And under the expanse, their wings were stretched out straight, one toward another. Each one also had two wings covering their bodies on one side and on the other. And I also heard the sound of their wings like the sound of abundant waters as they went, like the voice of the Almighty, Shaddai. El Shaddai is God Almighty. I don't, without having a Hebrew before me, I don't know whether it has the word El, but the Almighty is Shaddai. A sound of a tumult, like the sound of an army camp. Whenever they stood still, they dropped their wings. And there came a voice from above the expanse that was over their heads. Whenever they stood still, they dropped their wings. Again, verse 22, we see the word awesome. And we might think of someone who makes a half-court shot and it goes through the basket with a swoosh, and we'd say awesome. Or a touchdown. Or sometimes in reference to music, people will say that was awesome. Ezekiel says, this is awesome. We have wheels, gyroscope type thing, cherubim, four faces, and they're like this. And the cherubim are like forming a platform, and the platform is crystal, kind of, I think of gleaming ice. And above that is the throne, which is described in the closing section of this chapter. And he describes for us the sound, not just the appearance, but the sound. And it says these angels are sounding like Niagara Falls. They're sounding like waterfalls as they rush and move through the sky. And also like an army. I like to think of an army on parade. I suppose it could be total chaos, but I like to think of the army, the sound of the organized army. We think of they're marching. Because the thought of this is God's methodical movement. It's going to destroy Babylon's going to destroy Jerusalem in 586 B.C., and nothing and no one's going to stop it. It's all part of God's plan, and they deserve it. And that's the picture here. God's going through history. He's moving on this chariot throne, and he knows what he's doing. It's orderly. He's not going to be late. He's not going to be ahead of time. There's not going to be any chaos. And the angels, as they move, it's the sound of a roaring waterfalls, but it's like an army marching, passing through time, and it's Jerusalem's time. Time to get it. One thought I had here is these cherubim are totally obedient, but when there's nothing to do, they stop and listen for the next command. And it's kind of the way we ought to be. When we know what we should do it. Always obeying the Bible, chapter and verse. If there's a time we don't know what to do, maybe we ought to get quiet, meditate, spend time with God. Wait and see if there's any more clear direction as to his will for the next time. These angels do this. When they're given direction, they obey it. When they're not quite sure what to do, they just wait and listen. Kind of like little boy Samuel, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. Finally, in verse 26, we get to actually the throne. So far, it's been the chariot. Then there's an expanse, it's flat, now above it, in verse 26. Now above the expanse that was over their heads, there was something resembling a throne, like lapis lazuli in appearance, or some translate sapphire. And on that which resembled a throne high up was a figure with the appearance of a man. Then I looked. From the appearance of his loins and upward, something like glowing metal. It looked like fire all around within it. And from the appearance of his loins and downward, I saw something like fire, and there was radiance around him. As the appearance of the rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the appearance of the surrounding radiance. Such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell on my face. And I heard a voice speaking, and then it gives the call to the Son of Man, to Ezekiel, to go into the ministry. Nine times in this chapter we have the word likeness. We can't fully see God. It says that several times in the Bible. We can't fully see God. We can see representations of God. It's kind of like seeing Texas. We can see it, but we can't see all of it. Or, anything else like any geographical location. It says, no man has seen God at any time, John 1:18, although we will see glimpses of God in the future. Blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God. Or Job 19 says, in his body he will die and worms will destroy him, but he'll be raised. That says he will see God. Humans are the highest representation of God. We're the closest. And I think we'll be above the angels in ability. We'll surpass them. I think we were created almost above them. We'll surpass them. So when you have this being that's God on the throne, the closest you can do is it's human, but better. God's carried by the chariot, and then the expanse and the throne above it, and it's bluish in color. Although there's a rainbow, but bluish in color, so much from my theory, which you've heard before, that God's favorite color is blue. Can't quite say that for certain, but notice the flag of Israel is blue. That comes out of the book of Esther. That's where they got that. It's blue. And the most of the world, it's the blue planet. Most of it's blue. Either looking up at the atmosphere or down at the oceans, and here you're looking at the throne of God, and it says it's like lapis or like sapphire. Overall picture, like a rainbow. And verse 28, this is the glory of God. Anybody in the Bible that sees the glory of God, they're humbled by it. I feel convicted of sin, humbled by it, no back talk, and it's just worship of this being, wanting to serve this being. It's the opposite of him serving us, you know. He's our errand boy, and we tell him how we want to enhance our lives, how to make it better in every way. It's the other way around. Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening. We don't see him except in the pages of Scripture, but it's the same glory, same power, same control, the same providence or superintendence over destiny, whether our individual destiny or the world destiny. And we, like Ezekiel, should then say, we will obey and we will be your faithful messenger and go in the directions that you direct.